G'day Jets fans, it's me, David. We are here for another episode, a review episode of the Newcastle Jets. Interesting weekend with the A-League team getting up 2-0 over the Brisbane Roar and the W-League team unfortunately going down to Melbourne City 3-1 in the first and I think only doubleheader at McDonald Jones Stadium this year for round 7 of the A-League and round 6 of the W-League. Joining me tonight are two gentlemen. First of all, Luke, how are you?
Good, thanks, Dave. How are you?
Mate, I'm good. Looking forward to talking about a win. It's refreshing.
I feel this is going to be a lot easier than last week's review pod.
Yes, but look, we can actually credit the win to the ground reconnaissance work that I did behind enemy lines during the week. That's what I'm going with. A man who's joining us, I think, for his first pod this year. Am I right, Ben?
I'm not sure. I might have done one like late last season. It's the first one this season.
This season, sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. Mate, great to have you back on. It's been a while.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Good to be back.
Good to have you. Let's talk about the opening question. It's a very simple one tonight. And Luke, I'm going to come to you first. What is the food that you most associate with Christmas?
So I have two that I most associate with Christmas, and I think they both have their reasons to be answered here. So the first one is prawns. On both sides of my family, who I usually split Christmas Day up with, there's prawns galore, and many times with my Sydney family, not so my dad's side, mm-hmm. you have finger puppets made out of prawn heads. So that's one. And the other one is turkey, because there was one year that we went to my grandma's. She lives in Toronto before going down to Sydney to see that side of the family.
Yep.
And we were all there. We were all ready to go for having turkey for lunch. And she didn't get it out of the freezer until we got there. So we didn't get to have it. And I think nearly 10 years on, we still bring it up every Christmas. Make sure you put the turkey on, Grandma. And she doesn't like that too much.
Poor old Gran. You gotta give her a break.
She does all right. She lets me record the pot at her house. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Grandma. Is it Grandma Blundell?
Grandma Talbot.
Good on you, Grandma. Thank you very much. And Ben, what about you?
I'm gonna say big old leg of ham.
Yes.
Yeah, because in our family, we have ham throughout the year, but it's always, I don't know, it's not leg ham. So as growing up, I always used to get excited about having Christmas ham because it was just, you know, it tasted a lot better and you get big, thick slices of this nice smoked ham or whatever it is. And for probably 6 weeks of the year, we just have, I'd have like 3 ham sandwiches a day. And yeah, so it's ham for me.
Yeah, it's ham for me as well, for much the same reason. And whether we barbecue it, just barbecue it a little bit, just get it nice and warm and on the toast, or just even have it cold straight out the fridge on toast of a morning with butter. Oh, like that is Christmas. That is Christmas time to me. It's just ham on toast for breakfast. It's,
and you substitute the ham for bacon as well. Like we have bacon and eggs, but instead of bacon, it's
ham and eggs.
Leg ham. Yeah.
Yeah. Pequeno a los dos.
Well, and we then will keep the bone, and later in the year, Tegan will make a minestrone out of it. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and that's really nice as well. But there's just not a lot
like
of ham.
Ham soup or something.
Yeah, you could do that sort of thing. We just freeze it and then use it later. But there's just not a lot of
Save
ham
it
to come
winter.
Off it. Yeah, well, that's pretty much it. Christmas ham, love it. If you've got a suggestion and you want to tell us, listeners, what food you associate Christmas with, what you do with Christmas ham, it's, get in touch with us through all the social media channels. Well, guys, we're going to talk about the W League first. It was a disappointing 3-1 loss for the Jets in very hot conditions on Sunday afternoon. They, Melbourne City haven't been the team that they were in previous seasons, and we mentioned that during the preview. But it was a disappointing loss, Luke, for a team that I probably fancied to get at least something from the game against City.
As you said, City are a shadow of what they've been since they've started in the W League 3 years ago. They've won three grand finals in a row, and this year is the first year they've really looked like they're in some sort of trouble or struggling a bit. And it's the second week in a row that we've just missed opportunities where anyone should have scored that goal. I'm not sure if it was Kingsley again missed the City yesterday, but yeah, it's a short season. You don't get too many chances to make your way up the ladder, and teams that are in a slump like Melbourne City have been, you got to take your chances when you get them, and yeah, going down to them's not a good result for us this year.
Look, the Jets started. I must say that they started the game well. Deans started with a very interesting 3-4-3 formation, even maybe a 3-5-2 at times. It looked like, with Kingsley playing around in the number 10 position, also out wide as well at times. But Ben, it was after the drinks break that they had about the 25-minute mark that things really, really swung, and the Jets just completely lost ascendancy, and it was two quick goals for Melbourne City. I mean, is it really difficult once you have an extended break for you as a team, if you're certainly on top, to maintain or even regain that ascendancy? It seemed to just kill the Jets' momentum.
Yeah, those breaks are always an interesting one, aren't they? Because, you know, sometimes they're a drinks break, sometimes it's an injury or something of that nature, and, you know, the game stops for sometimes up to 5 minutes or whatever it is, and everyone cools down a bit, and it seems to be a bit of a lottery when it starts up what could happen. It's almost irrelevant what was happening before the break, and, you know, in this case, it definitely went against us, and it's quite unfortunate that we're unable to maintain that momentum we had going into the break.
It was a strong game overall, probably by Britt Ekstrom. Luke, I don't know if you've seen the match or the highlights, but she made some fabulous saves, but she really needed to be doing better for the first goal that we conceded from Kinga, where she didn't show enough urgency to get out to the ball to attack it. She almost waited for it to come to her, and Kinga just snuck in at the near post and popped it past her.
I haven't had a chance to see the highlights. I wasn't there until probably the 81st minute.
Mm-hmm.
But I've said especially a lot last year, that Ekstrom's one of, if not the best keeper in the league. The way she commands the box, for the most part, is fantastic, and some of the saves she pulls off are incredible. So to hear, probably a bit of hesitation on her part for that first goal from someone who's usually such a commanding figure at the back, is a bit of a surprise, and probably, you know, you could say it's probably caught the team off guard, and, you know, that their stalwart at the back, the one who's always solid, has come up with an error. So I guess that's something that potentially contribute to it. So it's unfortunate from her to, you know, you always say that mistakes always come at the worst time, so, you know, it is rare for her to make a mistake. But I guess that just goes to show that even though Melbourne City are having a bad year this year by their standards, you can't give them a chance at all. They've just got quality around the park.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets didn't make it easy on themselves. They were turning over possession really, really easily, particularly from the back, struggling to find a player in midfield. There was a big gap between the attacking line and the defensive line for the Jets. And it was really frustrating to watch, I must say, throughout the game, that there was times that the Jets could have started to bring the ball out. And I'm not saying that one player I'm going to call out in particular, just because I noticed it more regularly, was Hannah Brewer. She was very guilty, and Larissa Crummer at times as well, of turning the ball over in really dangerous areas, struggling to find a player, not taking the opportunity really to bring the ball out. Brewer certainly more so than Crummer, where we just look to lump the ball long. And
sorry to cut you off, Dave. I don't think yesterday was the day to be playing the ball too long, because the wind there was horrific.
Absolutely.
Like, it was just causing havoc for everyone, even in the men's game. So I think Larissa Cromer as well, you know, being a natural striker, moving to the back position, that's probably just a positional, you know, mentality thing that she's not used to, you know, playing the ball out. She doesn't have that urgency about her. And I think it was someone in the Jetstream messenger group that said that there was maybe the second goal where she just sort of looked to, I guess, give up the chase a bit because that wasn't her game. She's not used to tracking back as much as she needs to be as a central defender.
Mm. And she still looks a bit underdone. I know she's coming back from injury. Look, granted that it was a really, really warm day. The players by the end of the game were spent. But, yeah, she still looks a little bit underdone. But player, Ben, that was uncertain of taking her spot in the team was Katie Stengel. But a lovely ball from Emily Van Egmon from a free kick delivered straight onto her foot, and it was a lovely side-footed volley that she put past Lydia Williams to bring the score back 2-1. But she's opened her account now for the season, which is a really good sign for the Jets, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, she was a very important player for us last year, and I think she does a lot of work even when she's not scoring goals. Like, she's quite good at holding up the ball and bringing other people into play, but definitely good for us as a team and also for her confidence to get that first goal out of the way for the season, and hopefully she can keep the ball rolling on that one.
Absolutely, and Luke, unfortunately, the loss now moves the Jets. We mentioned on the pod that it was a really important game for the Jets to be able to maintain contact with the top four, and it now leaves us in eighth position out of nine. We are on 6 points. Fourth is on eight after a couple of draws throughout the round this weekend. But look, it's the Jets now travel to Perth next week, and we'll talk about that later in the week. But they're coming up against second place Perth Glory, who everyone knows Sam Kerr is in that team. For a team that struggled to keep a clean sheet, and also a team that struggled to score goals, it's not boding well for the team. And their finals really hang in the balance, because after the Glory game, they've got a bye.
It's a really tight comp, and as I said before, I think they played maybe either 12 games or 14 games, or there's 14 rounds and two byes. I can't remember off the top of my head, but the competition, it's not a long one, so you can't give anyone any head start or anything. We've dropped points against 13 rounds. So far we've lost to Melbourne Victory, which they're doing exceptionally well this year. Compared to last year, I think they finished bottom two, possibly bottom three. We lost to them. We lost to Brisbane in the game that neither team deserved to win. And now we lost to Melbourne City, who were in probably the worst form of their history. So it's, it just goes to show that, as you said, 2 points separating fourth from eighth, it's tight as all hell there. But it's those sort of games that you need to be picking up the points to not be playing catch up later on in the season when, you know, other teams, when you've got a bye or when other teams are able to get ahead, because it's a lopsided draw. Not everyone plays each other twice. So we could potentially play Victory twice and Wanderers once, whereas Perth may play Wanderers twice and Adelaide once. So it's a competition that needs to be even. It needs to be 18 rounds or 16 rounds, and each team plays each team twice at least.
Yep. I agree.
I understand, you know, that whatever reason it may not be viable, it interferes with the Northern Hemisphere competitions. Okay, but it's the other way is you go and you play each team once and have an 8-round season like the Youth League does, and that's no good either. So, no. Perth this weekend is going to be tough. I mean, I won't get into it too much now. We'll do it on the preview pod later in the week, but it's a tough task, Perth in Perth, and not only Sam Kerr but Rachel Hill as well. The two of them are probably the most lethal pair in the W League over the last couple of seasons. So It's going to be a tough week for us, I think.
Yeah, and they're undefeated too, so make it even more difficult. But Ben, just quickly, as we wrap up our chat on the W League, just a touch over 3,300 people there to watch the W League game this weekend. One thing about, I must say, about the Jets fans, they really get behind the W League team.
Yeah, that's a pretty good crowd number considering what the day was like as well. I mean, I think it was still around 35 or something at the start of the men's game, so it was not a great day to be out in the sun at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for players or fans. So, you know, that's a very respectable crowd figure, and I'm sure it compares pretty favourably with most of the crowds that the other W League teams are pulling. So it's, very good to see.
Yeah, look, just for comparison, there was 1,500 at the Sydney FC game. That was at Seymour Shore. I don't know where that is, but they drew 1,500, and there was a thousand at Marsden Park in Adelaide to watch Adelaide take on Perth. So, Jets, disappointing for the Jets, but they'll look to bounce back and hopefully put the first defeat on Perth Glory later in the week. All right, well, before we move on to talk about the A-League, we'll listen to the highlights of the A-League match, and here they are, courtesy of Fox Sports.
And a warm welcome on a very warm day to McDonald Jones Stadium for the final game in Round 7. It is Newcastle Jets against the Brisbane Roar. Has been a rather patchy start to the season for the Newcastle Jets. Good in places, a little toothless in attack. That's probably a fair summary. Mackay. Oh, it's a good ball. It's a great save. What a stop from Glenn Moss to deny Eric Boatiak. That is a world-class save by the New Zealander.
All on the back of Demi Petrados' poor pass. Well, we've seen some pretty impressive stuff so far today, but nothing beats this. That is amazing from Glenn Moss.
Curls it around, but just too high. Knew what he wanted to do.
This from Demi Petrados. Plenty of promise about it. Jamie Young wasn't convinced.
2 minutes of stoppage time. Georgeski in behind. Shepherd! His first goal in the A-League. And it arrives at a very opportune moment for the Newcastle Jets. First half stoppage time. What a moment for Kane Shepherd.
Beautiful work. This is the goal of a poacher. Short, near post run. Beautiful outside of the left foot. And look at the Brisbane defender he beat to do it. Avram Papadopoulos. And as we've said repeatedly through his time in the A-League, that's not something that attackers do easily. Even more credit to Kane Shepherd, who breaks his duck.
I do here. Kuczewski off the frame of the goal. Jair, great save, Jamie Young. And Brisbane scramble it away. Jamie Young giving his teammates a bake. It's Demi Petrathos. It's 3-on-3. And he slides it into the path of Jair! 2-0 Newcastle! And Jair's long goal-scoring drought is over. September 2017, when he last had that feeling. And boy, it feels good for him and for the Jets. Penalty spot. They're in no particular hurry, Newcastle. Well, there's a problem with the corner arc. I'm not sure removing the corner flag helps.
Hey, when do you take the corner flag out? Never. Never.
It's the final 90 seconds and Petrathos onside. Square of him is right Denton if he needs him. The cutback. Oh, right Denton. Could be the miss of the season. And Rodenton just appeared to fall over at the crucial moment. Ball over at McDonald Jones Stadium. And it's the Jets' first home win of the season. Victory in their 350th A-League game. And one that will lift them back into the top six for the first time this season.
Thanks very much again to Fox Sports for the continued use of their audio. Interesting starting lineup. We'll start there, Ben. With the surprise inclusion of Ronnie Vargas, he was named out as a absentee from the squad due to injury earlier in the week, but surprise late inclusion, but a positive inclusion at that.
Oh, definitely. You know, we would have missed him big time if he wasn't able to take part in the game. Listening to Ernie's interview, it sounds like he was in doubt and had hardly trained before Thursday when they named their squad. But then they were sort of leaving the door open if he came good, and they sort of got to game day and he was sort of feeling okay and was very keen to take part. So and obviously Ernie was very glad to have him as an option because he's, you know, a fantastic player for us. So yeah, it's great to get him on the park, and good that he was able to get through unscathed and took a bit of an early substitute to make sure that was the case.
Mm. The other player that was probably a surprise exclusion, and it was due to a back injury, was Jason Hoffman, Luke, with Kane Shepherd coming in and actually doing well in his starting debut for the club.
He did, and it was a bit of a surprise that Hoffy was out due to back injury, which I think they said on NBN tonight that he got it when he woke up Sunday morning. So, you know, that's the sort of chance that players like Shepherd need. You know, he's come off the bench a few times early on in the season and looked good, and then picked up an injury at a time where, you know, I personally thought that he was probably pushing his starting position at the time. Mm-hmm. That was just after the Sydney FC game, so for him to get the chance, you know, it's good to see one of our young strikers, I guess, especially someone who has come from the NPL, take their chance when they got it.
It's often difficult for a player to come off the bench and settle into the pace of the game early on, Ben, but I thought Shepherd from the start played really well, and he settled into the rhythm of the game and certainly looked up to pace. And not overawed by the occasion. How did you see his performance?
Yeah, I was quite impressed by him. I think from the little we've seen of him this season, it's sort of apparent the style of player he is, and being deployed up the front and sort of being used as a focal point, a target man, really allowed him to use his strength of being able to, you know, receive the ball, pull it down, hold it up while holding off a defender, and either look to bring people into play or try and beat the defender. And I thought he, you know, he gave us an out ball, gave us someone to hit up front. And I thought on another day he may have had a few more defenders worried about some yellow cards. But yeah, no, I thought he was excellent.
We'll come on to that. We'll come on to that.
I think part of... Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, no, go.
He, for someone who a couple of months ago was playing NPL in Victoria, he came up against Avram Papadopoulos, a former international player, and he made Papadopoulos his bitch. He had not, like, Papadopoulos had years of experience, and Shepherd just tore havoc on them, both the central defenders pairing for his stint in the game, and it's fantastic to see, and it's not something that I think Brisbane would have ever prepared for, having Shepherd up front. And, you know, maybe it will take a bit more for other coaches to really get on board with the shutting him down the way they shut Dimi or Vargas down, but if he can perform like he did and cause those, like, centre-backs like them problems game in, game out, I think we've got a real talent on our hands.
Hey, look, we might be able to revive the old You Are Heskey's Bitch, but reframe it as You Are Shepherd's Bitch song. I mean, hey, we haven't had the opportunity to sing that to Galekovic so far. We should have. But, yeah, look, we could see a rebirth of that song. It's long overdue. Well, look at the start of the game. Actually, even before the start of the game, there was a bit of a surprise inclusion as the teams walked out. But, Ben, it was pleasant to see Mustafa Amini back in the country and come out to take the coin toss.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I think he fit right in with his surrounding cast as well. And as the game wore on, that became more apparent.
Well, look, I think that there was certainly a bit of confusion between Mustafa and his clown buddies out in the middle, but because they were wearing green and he was wearing yellow. I mean, clearly he didn't get the message, Luke.
Oh, I can't believe they let John Aloisi walk out with the players.
Oh, jeez.
12 months ago, it was Star Wars around. This year, it's Ronald McDonald doing the coin toss. Like, this is what the A-League's about.
I can't wait for the Michelin Man to come out for Remember the Former Stadium Sponsors round. Oh, jeez. Oh, do you reckon the Michelin tyres still have that suit? I don't know. Anyway, look, it was an interesting start to the game, Ben. I thought Brisbane had the better of the early exchanges. How did you see the start and the approach that Brisbane put to the Jets?
Yeah, I think the first probably 5 minutes was pretty 50-50 with both teams sort of competing. But once the game settled down, into its rhythm, I thought for probably the next maybe 15 minutes or something, Brisbane looked more comfortable on the ball. Their central midfielders were getting, you know, a lot of time in comfortable possession, and especially down the Brisbane's right side, so Vujicic's side, they were sort of getting in behind there and getting a lot of crosses in, or, you know, threatening positions with... what's the French winger's name?
Boutiac,
yeah. Him and Hingert were combining quite nicely along with their central midfield. And I think they may have even tried to target that, regardless of whether they thought Jackson or Vita was playing there as a potential weak point. But they definitely were having some joy, if not any, end product down that side.
Well, I mean... In the early exchanges, I thought Matt McKay's mouth was doing more of the talking than his football, Luke, but he finally delivered a lovely little ball into Boutiac early on that produced a fine, absolutely fine save that I didn't give enough credit to at the ground, but having a watch of it on replay, it was a great save by Glenn Moss to just tip the ball around the corner and keep it at nil all very early on.
Well, that save won save of the week from the A-League. And right,
did it?
So
okay.
It was... You talk about your world-class keepers like De Gea and Neuer and those sort of players like that. If one of those players had made that save, that'd be doing the rounds on social media. It was fantastic. He was diving backwards and got fingers to it, and then it just missed the goals. Like, it was a fantastic save. And I think I was thinking at the time, man, how shit would this be that we're conceding a goal that Matt McKay set up? Like, what have we become that he's now playmaker and everything. So,
yeah.
It was a great save from Moss. And I think, from memory, it was probably one of the only ones he really had to make that sort of troubled anyone at all. Like, the rest of the shots that Brisbane had throughout the game, you know, there was a few ones that he sort of had to reach for, but there wasn't anything else too troubling, I didn't think.
No, he did make three saves during the game, and other than that first one, there was nothing that was particularly troubling for him. So it was good for him to get another clean sheet, the defence to get a second clean sheet in three rounds, I should say, Ben. It's it was almost like last week was just a blip, hopefully, but that'll build confidence for the team, particularly as they welcome Perth, freak scoring Perth, to McDonald Jones Stadium next Sunday.
Yeah, definitely a confidence builder. I think the defence overall has been going fairly well this season. I'd say their downfall has been the blokes at the other end of the field, because as well as you defend, if you're struggling to score goals, you just always feel like you're under pressure and you're on a heightened to nothing. Either even if you keep a clean sheet, it's still not enough and it's going to be a struggle to do that. Whereas if you can get a couple of goals, the game turns around and all of a sudden you feel free to play with the ball how you like, and the other team starts scrambling and it just changes the game. So I think that combined with, I thought Georgievski had by far his best game of the season so far, and we haven't really seen Vujica so far this season. So, but yeah, Nikolai and Nigel have been going pretty well this season, and the weekend was no exception.
Let's talk about the fullbacks then, Luke. Georgievski and Vujica, Vujice really hasn't got a look in this year. Georgievski has been maligned to an extent for his performances. He hasn't been hitting the levels that he hit last year. But I thought that they both offered a great amount of presence going forward and great amount of energy. And Georgievski as well, probably his best performance so far this year.
I definitely agree with that for Georgievski. It was, I think it was the team's best performance all around this year. From memory, like, the game yesterday was probably the most like they played last season, since last season. Mm. A lot of the players, just the way they performed yesterday was reminiscent of when we were going on our winning streak last year, and it was good to see. It definitely built confidence, I think, in both the fans and the players. For Georgievski, I think, I agree, I think it was his best performance so far this year. He just terrorised the wingers down that side, and, you know, he got the assist for the Shepherd goal. I'll go into that a bit more when we talk about Shepherd's goal. But I think he did very well, definitely his best performance. Vojica, I was impressed. There was a couple of times I thought he was caught out, especially earlier on in the first half, during Brisbane's period of domination, as Ben was talking about in the first 15-20 minutes. But this isn't anything against Lockie Jackson, because I think he has done well in the position he's not used to. That performance was, how do I put this? It was what we've been missing in that left back role for the team. We saw last year we had, If it wasn't Georgievski, it was Katrumbas or Vojica on that left wing, running down and bombing forward. And Lockie, he doesn't have that sort of mobility, and he's central back, so he's not used to pushing forward and tracking back all game. So to have someone like Vojica in there, he put some decent crosses in that, you know, we won corners off, or if we were unlucky not to get the head on it or some part of the body on it. And it was definitely something that's been missing from our game so far this season.
Something that I think also changed this week, Ben, having a look at the stats, there was no outfield player with less than 70% passing accuracy. And I think that that's been something missing in the Jets' performances. Of note, I'm actually going to call out Dimi Petratos, who had the second most amount of passes, one behind Nigel Bugard. Bugard had 44 and Petratos had 43. And he had 93% pass accuracy. And he goes, you might go, yep, sure, look how many is he passing backwards. 33% of his passes were actually forwards, 26% to the left, 19% to the right, and 23% back. So to misplace three passes of your 43 is an absolutely outstanding performance. And I think that that was the key to the Jets finding their rhythm this week.
That is a very interesting stat, because I wouldn't have thought he had 93%, and the fact that he did is extremely impressive given the role that he plays, and just from watching the game, how many of his passes are, you know, ambitious. Like, it's part of his job description that up front you have to try things, you have to take risks, take chances in order to create something, because if you just play boring passes, you won't get anywhere. So to pull off 93% in that sort of winger / attacking midfield position is extremely impressive, and sort of reinforces my viewpoint that he as well as Georgievski really stepped up individually this week, as well as I thought the team played better collectively, and I thought those two stood up a lot more than they have been so far this season as well.
We'll move on to Shepherd's goal. As the half progressed, I thought the Jets started to assert their dominance more, Luke, and I would have been worried had we gone into the sheds at half-time at nil-all. Probably would have been undeserved. But Shepherd, some lovely work by it, with Dimi, overlapping run by Daniel Georgievski on the right, and it was a lovely, lovely solid pass in, and Shepherd's just ghosted past his bitch and got a got a left-footed outside the foot, straight in, first time, past Jamie Young. Really couldn't do anything about it. And it was a wonderful goal to become the 82nd Newcastle Jets player to score, different A-League player to score in the A-League.
It was a striker's finish. I think that's the best way you can describe that goal. It wasn't anything fancy, although hitting it outside of left foot in that position was fairly decent. Like, that's, you know, I think there'd be a number of players that would take a touch or get it on their preferred foot before hitting that. And to hit it outside of the left foot first go, it was a poacher's goal. It was what I think our team's been lacking a bit with Roy being out. Hoffman, he's done well. He's not a striker, and he just doesn't have that natural instinct that Shepherd has up front. But I think the goal was well worked. I've watched the replay a couple of times, and Dimi on the right, he holds the ball up. Georgievski makes the run for him, and Alex Lopez for Brisbane is just standing flat-footed as Georgievski runs past him. So as soon as Georgievski's gone, Lopez turns and starts running after him. It's too late, son. You've lost it. Like, I don't know how he didn't pick up that he was running through, but yeah, it was a great run. It was, and yeah, as I said, Georgievski gets the assist. It's a first one for the season. It was a good effort all around from the team, and it happened in injury time, which is in history we'll say that's when we concede. So. For us to get the goal, that was really nice.
And look, probably the most controversial moment, and I'm not of the half, just to finish that point on the first 45, Ben, wasn't so much that Jason Hoffman was credited with the goal by the ground announcer. No, it was. I actually thought Daniel Bowles was going to get sent. He was booked very early on, and then another challenge from that he put in on Kane Shepherd, where Shepherd spun him. And he was off, and Bowles has tripped him. I don't know if you were at the ground or watching, but as Kurt Arms is running towards him, he's got his hand on his back pocket like he's going to show the yellow card. But I think he's looked and realised who the player is, and thought, "I've already booked you, and if I do this again, you're off." And that's going to not spoil the spectacle, but I've already booked you. So,
well, that's your job.
That's his job. Yeah.
That's his job.
Do you think that Daniel Bowles should be? Do you think Christmas has come early for this guy?
Is the second one you're talking about, was that sort of on the edge of the box?
Yeah, it was probably about halfway between, probably about more towards the box than more so the halfway line.
Yeah, because there was the one on halfway where he spun him and he did get the yellow.
Yep.
And then
he's done it again.
Yeah, and it was sort of in the last line of defence, and I thought, you know, looking at the replay, I was like, all right, so you wouldn't give a red card for it because there's a couple of blokes nearby, but if he didn't get fouled there, he's through on goal. Like, you could see that as a goal-scoring opportunity, and I thought, you know, looking at you, all right, that's a yellow card. And there was no yellow card, and you're just thinking, you know...
The challenge he got the yellow card for, that he should have had a yellow card before that.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like it was, oh, you know, this is your last warning. He should have had two before that tackle.
I think that there were a number of players that they were very lucky to have escaped yellow card bookings in that game. And Brisbane were all lucky.
How Brisbane only got three yellow cards, I will never know.
I don't know either.
There was at least six different players, and I'm not including the two others that Bowl should have had. There were six players that deserved yellow cards that didn't get them.
I thought Bautiak deserved one, at least.
I thought their defensive midfielder should have had a couple as well. I'm not sure of his name, but
Thomas Christensen.
No, he was not. No, he sort of had a shaped head.
You lost me. I think that's Christensen.
Not sure.
I think that's Thomas Christensen. He's got a crew. Anyway, one of their players.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Well, like, I thought there was at least a half dozen challenges where, you know, we're sort of, if not on the counter, then, you know, starting a break, and then just a clear professional foul / shirt pull. Like, the how many shirt pulls was there that didn't get pulled back for a yellow card? That's supposed to be an automatic given, and they just weren't. Yeah.
The thing that gets me is if Ams had given half the yellow cards he should have earlier on in the game, then you wouldn't have had the problems you had later on in the game where Brisbane are just doing whatever they want and getting away with it. Because they wouldn't have done it because he would have stamped it out and said, right, if you do this at all, it's a yellow card. That's the problem with the officials in the A-League, that there's no consistency, and that was something that could have easily been stamped out of the game early on. He makes an example of one or two players, Yeah. And I think he spent too much time with Ronald McDonald before the game, probably, as he said. Just, it was crazy how they only ended up with 3 yellow cards from that game and no red cards.
Could you imagine if Ronald McDonald had actually given him slices of cheese and tomato, like, as his cards? Like, that could have just taken the sponsorship to a whole new level. He just goes to his pocket and gets a nice bit of cheese and just give him the cheese. Anyway, Kurt Ames, full stop. Second half, the Jets came out with... Well, they were firing straight up, and Ronnie Vargas with a header that's cannoned off the post, Jair with the follow-up shot that's blocked, and we earn a corner somehow. How the hell did we miss that?
Yeah, that was a very close call, wasn't it? You sort of saw the header going and like, oh, okay, here we go. Oh, post. Oh, right. And then there was the follow-up as well that got smothered, I think, and then good old Jamie went on his big double fist pump parade. But yeah, it was quite the close call.
But it didn't take long for Jair to actually get on the get his goal, Ben. I mean, it's his first goal since 2017, and it was a breakaway goal. Dimmy drew the player in well. Lovely little layoff, and I actually think it was a really good finish by Jair to go near post, and his celebration, mate. The guy's probably still running around in McDonald James Stadium, giving it the big ones. Do you know what? Bloody good on him.
Yeah, I love the celebration. I love the celebration almost as much as I love the goal, to be honest. Like, seeing the raw, unadulterated joy that he had for getting that monkey off his back and scoring a goal, and just how much it meant to him was fantastic. I agree. I thought it was a good finish, and I'd actually thought that Dimi had sold him a little bit short when the layoff went in. I thought, oh, he's going to get blocked here, but managed to get his shot off and, you know, emphatic finish. So, yeah, great goal, and very happy for the guy.
And Luke, hopefully this is the monkey off the back, the weight off the shoulders, the free Jair of the pressure and the possibly crippling crippling stress that he has about not scoring in such a long time, that we see a different player in the coming weeks, because, you know, we need to find an outlet, and he could be it, particularly with Roy coming back.
He could be, and as you said, it was a great finish, first time near post, and it's definitely the sort of goal, the way he celebrated it, you could tell it meant a lot to him, regardless of whatever memes came out about it, which I thought were hilarious. It obviously meant a lot to the bloke, good on him, because it was a hell of a finish. And hopefully that gives him the confidence and just takes the, as you said, the monkey off his back. He's broken his duck now. He's got one. He doesn't have to worry about, oh, when's it going to come? It's come. You just need to get the next one now. Don't leave another 14 months. Just go for it. And I think the big thing for me is how he will react moving forward. In the first half or early in the second half before his goal and in previous weeks, he's gotten into the box and passed and turned around and passed backwards when he could have just shot himself, or he could have put a ball in that. I think he probably had that hesitation of, oh, what if I don't score here? Oh, this isn't the angle I need, or something that, you know, we've sort of seen attacks break down because of it. I think now we'll probably see that confidence build up of, okay, I've got one. Let's have a ping and see how it goes. Which I think that's the big thing we need. We just haven't had the sort of creativity we had last year. And if he's getting into those positions again, I think you'll find he'll probably take that shot 9 times out of 10.
I think something that's probably gone uncredited, Ben, in this game is the job that Kantorovsky and Jurgarkovic did in midfield as that screening role. Having looked at the touches that Brisbane Roar have had during the game, Christensen and Lopez, their two holding midfielders, had 93 and 87 touches, so like 180 touches between them in 90 minutes. Then you look at the players that were starting to get forward. Mikkelsen barely touched it, 28. Enrique, 32. And Baltiak 63 actually got the ball a fair bit. But it's interesting that the screening job that they did really stifled Brisbane Roar and what they could do. I mean, Taggart only had 5 touches in his 20 minutes. Their job, possibly unheralded, but it was a great screening role they had.
Yeah, look, they've been solid for us for most of last season. This season, I think they were fantastic once again against Brisbane. I think they both looked more comfortable on the ball as well, but, you know, the defence behind them, I think, played a big part as well, because Topper and Boogs just weren't giving anyone in the centre any change at all. Like, anything that was coming over the top, I think, you know, there's probably only maybe 3 or 4 times in the game, I'd say, where a ball over the top managed to get to the feet of a Brisbane player and they went through with it. It was, you know, anything that sort of came over was getting cleaned up by those two. And so they were forced to play wide. And I think that's why Baltiak was able to get so many touches, because they'd sort of double up on the full on our fullbacks, and, you know, they can get touches out wide, but then weren't able to get any ball into the centre where they can do some damage. So that's a credit to, I guess, the back six, you'd call it, including those two midfielders.
I think, sorry, Dave. In games, like, they often say that you can tell that a defensive midfielder's done well if you don't hear their name too much. I personally didn't pick up on too much that either of them had done that game, which must mean they did really well, because there wasn't too many mistakes. You barely knew they were really on the field for a lot of it, because they were just, it was just so smooth with them there, and they were just breaking down attack after attack and forcing the Brisbane players to do the interesting tactic of play the long ball over the top to the shortest player on the field in Enrique. So yeah, credit to both Steve and Canner, because, yeah, they did really well.
And, look, as they continued to press and we continued to build on the game, the Jets had one final chance and a breakaway. Well, we had two chances, I suppose, Mitch Austin's as well, but Dimmy broke down the field, and Matty Redenton came on, and he was... Look, Ben, it was easier for the bloke to score, but the ball just got stuck under his feet. Wow. He's probably still kicking himself. Yeah. he'll know that he stuffed up, and he's probably kicking himself.
Uh-huh. I'd say he'll be kicking himself for a few weeks about that, if he's anything like myself. But, yeah, it was good that it came in a game situation that we're able to look at it in a lighthearted manner, you know, being 2-0 up and ending up sort of cruising through to victory. You'd rather have it in a situation like that where you can laugh at it than look at it as essentially drop points. To be fair to him, I think the ball was maybe slightly behind him and he sort of stuffed up his feet. Mm-hmm. And look, you should still be putting it away. But yeah, that's one he won't forget soon.
Could you imagine if the game was on that? I mean, far out.
Oh, yeah.
I reckon there'd have been a riot. There'd have been a riot. Anyway, look.
You're Lachlan Jackson.
Do you reckon, Luke, that if we'd gone 3 or 4, that would have flattered us that game?
I don't think so. I think we did enough in that game to show that we were clearly better. As I said before, Brisbane, by the end of the game, there was just fouls everywhere coming from them. I think we sort of probably died off a little bit at the end there when we started making changes and Shepherd came off and Vargas came off. But I think we'd done enough that, you know, if that goal had gone in 3-0, I think that probably would have reflected the game fairly well. I don't think anyone could have really had too many complaints about that. Brisbane had that one real chance at the start through Baltiak that Moss saved. Mm. As you said, there wasn't really anything else that Moss had to do that was difficult. Like, most of it came to him. So I think 3-0 would have been, you couldn't argue that was unfair or flattered us or anything.
Okay. All right, well, before we hear from Ernie Merrick, Ben, how good was it to see kids on the field again at the end of the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's always great to let the guys and girls get out there and have a bit of a run around on the hallowed turf where their heroes have trod before them. You know, it really encourages that, you know, that feeling of a pathway between, you know, the local community and the elite footballing team, and that, mm-hmm. you know, then they're not so far apart, and, you know, if that's where you want to go with it, it's there for you, and, you know, at the end of the day, anyone can play. It's part of the beautiful part of our game, is that all you need is a bit of grass and a ball, and you can have a game. So, yeah, it's great to see them out there and have a run around.
And were you out there, Luke?
No, not this time. I was going to say, you know, it's, you know, I've been a fan for a long time, and I've been on the ground of Hunter Stadium a lot. Even now, even after all my time working there and everything, there's something about being on the field that's just special. It's got, as Lubo would say, vibes. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing for the club to do. It's definitely, it gives you that sort of, it's just something special about it that, you know, especially as a kid, I can imagine that it would just be fantastic. It'd be the best feeling in the world, being able to walk on the field and everything. And I still feel that now, and I'm questionably an adult. So, yeah, I think it's great for the club to do.
Absolutely, I think it is too. And as a parent, I had a photo on my phone of my son running around the field with a football, dressed up in his Liverpool gear, which is what we had at the time. And I managed to get both photos of both my kids now running around, having fun in their Jets gear. It's something that's special as well. So, creates a lot of memories, and it was really good. So, good on the Jets. Hopefully, they do it again this week, because it's just what our club is about. So, now before we talk about players of the match, we'll listen to Ernie Merrick. Here he is. Thanks to Fox Sports.
The real Jets.
Yes, I thought it was a good response from last week. I mean, they weren't that bad last week. I just thought the first 20 minutes we weren't in the game and chased shadows. And last week then we started to play a bit, but there was nothing at the end of it. Today there was the two strikers that have returned to the squad were the two ones that scored. And it's interesting because Kane Shepherd wouldn't have been playing. He'd have been on the bench if Jason had been right, but Jason hurt his back this morning. And so Kane came in and did a good job.
Very confident young man.
He is. He's he doesn't look mobile. He's surprisingly mobile, but he's very strong on the ball. He's hard to push off the ball. And when he turned Bowles, and it looked to me like Bowles fouled him, I thought that was Bowles' second yellow, but referee didn't see it that way. But overall, I thought in the first half they had a few chances. It was both teams really needed to win that game, so it was a bit edgy and not much flowing play. They had their chances. Glenn pulled off a great fingertip save, a couple of crosses, but apart from that, in the second half I thought we took over. Glenn, I don't think he had a save to make in the second half. He just was taking crosses, and the two centre-backs did a good job in front of him, and then Ben in front of the two centre-backs. But our two best players, I thought, were Ronnie and Demi, and we could have scored a couple at the end there.
Yeah, I mean, Ronnie was knockout player for second services on Thursday.
Yeah, well, remember, we have to put in our team on Thursday morning, which is 4 days away from the game, and he hadn't trained all week, so we didn't think he'd come up, but he was pretty keen to play. The treatment he got seemed to work really well. And I always said there was a small chance of him playing. I know Robert didn't write that, but that's why I said there was a small chance of him playing. And Nathan Renwick is a very good physio, and I think that just got him over the line, and he was pretty keen to play, but we didn't want to risk him anymore.
You can see, I mean, the importance for Jair, how he celebrated that, so how frustrated maybe he's been the first few weeks. He hasn't delivered on what thought he would in goals.
Yeah, Ronnie delivered a good ball. He struck it really well. I mean, it was... But you've seen him at training. He scores goals like that at training. I think he'll... help him relax a bit and have a bit more belief in his role in the team and getting forward into goal scoring positions. So he did really well.
And with Kane, I mean, first of that training, he looked like he could rise to that level. Was that the impression that he didn't look out of?
No, I thought you know, there's some good players in the national Premier Leagues in several states. You can't carry too many of them, but to find a goal scorer is pretty tough, and he's had non-league experience. He was in Finland briefly, so he's always been knocking on the door, and he's still only 24. So he settled down very quickly, didn't give the ball away much at all, and he was in the goal-scoring area when he needed to be. So he's given me a little bit of some decision-making to make regarding the starting 11 next week, and that's what I like.
And you're starting to feel like all the pieces are starting to fall into place.
Yes, we're getting players back. We get two strikers back and we lose one, Jason. But yeah, the boys are, I mean, it was a clean sheet, didn't give much away at the back, created, I said to them, don't sit on one or two goals. We've got to be the type of team that scores. And I don't know how we didn't score two more goals at the end there, because Roar had to press their players forward to get something back out of it, and that left us with a great chance to counter-attack, which we didn't cash in on. But no, we haven't played bad football. I think the first six games we only had one poor game. Other than that, we've been a bit unlucky not to take more points away from the other games, but we're home now for a couple of games. Let's see if we can take all 3 points. But it was a good performance, and it was exciting for the crowd at the end especially.
Confidence-wise, I mean, that's always...
Yes, I just, you know, I can talk about the poor draw when you've won. And I just... The top two teams have probably had more games at home than anyone. Victory got 4 home games out of 6 and 2 away. Perth's had home, away for the first 6 games, so they've had 3. To play 4 away games and 2 at home against the 2 top teams, there's something wrong with our draw, and we have to keep doing this. And everyone should play home and away, and if we can't get the big stadiums, we should use the small stadiums like Mudgee. I mean, that worked out a treat. We just can't be held to ransom by stadiums.
Jason, is Jason serious, or is it just a
word? No, he was recovering quickly, but we decided not to risk it.
Good performance from Boitza coming back?
Yes, Ivan did really well. Lachlan had broken his nose. It was just a breathing issue, really. So Ivan did really well. Daniel did well on the right-hand side. As I say, our defence didn't give much away, and Ben screened in front of them really well. We got it together more in the second half, but it wasn't a fluent passing game in the first half. But we did what we needed to do. We scored goals, and we nearly scored more, and it was great for our return home. All right, guys.
All right, there's Ernie. Good mood. Good to see. But Luke, give your player of the match. Who did you think was the standout this round?
I think it was... I found it kind of hard to pick a standout. I think there was a lot of people that did really well. I don't know if there was one person in particular that I was like, oh man, they were a game changer for us. I'm personally going to go Topper Stanley, because for me, he was the player that I sort of thought, this is what he was last year. This is the sort of performance that he put in, week out last year. Just how casually he intercepted the ball on a number of occasions or picked the ball out of the air. It was, for me, it was, it was the Topper of old. And that's why I pick him.
Okay. And what about you, Ben?
I'm sort of like Luke. I thought there's probably a 7 or 8 players that would be in the mix. That, you know, there were so many great performances. At the top of the pile for me would be Georgevski and Petrados, and I think I'm just going to give it to Georgevski. because I think the difference in his the difference in levels between his performance on the weekend compared to the rest of his season, I just thought was just a massive jump in just execution, commitment, like effort. Everything was just, you know, he was excellent, and you know, he was cleaning up after other people at times. I think he swept in behind the centre backs and put in a block on a on an attack that Brisbane threw on, and yeah, he was fantastic. So I'm going to go Georgevski.
For me, it was Dimi. I thought it was his best performance so far this year, and really, really impressed with what I saw from him. So Dimi Petratos, and also for me from the W League, I'm going to pick Taylor Smith for the Jets. She was absolutely fantastic. I think
she's a hell of a player.
I've heard people rave about her, and I was like, okay, yeah, look, I wonder how good she really is. I watched her, and she is so fast. She's so direct, and she's got something about her. She's a really good pickup for us. So, yeah,
she used to be a sprinter at UCLA.
Yeah, you can tell.
So that's where the speed comes from. Yeah.
You can tell. She's fast. So, So, that's really it. I don't think we've got any news.
We've got the Olive Roos camp is happening in Canberra at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three players from the Jets who have been selected in the camp. So they'll be there for the first part of this week. They'll be back in time for the game on the weekend. And that was Angus Thurgate, Ivan Voyica, and Johnny Katrumbis, which I think that's fantastic for Johnny after his last couple of months to get a call up to the Ollie Roos camp. Hopefully he's able to impress the coaches and make his first international appearance for Australia.
Yeah, wow, that's excellent. Awesome. Good job to those three players. It's good to see some representation from the Jets in the Ollie Roos camp as well. I will also mention that the Jets Youth League did go down to Western Sydney during the week. I think it was Friday. They went down 3-0. Or Saturday. Friday or Saturday, they went down 3-0, unfortunately. That did feature players such as Angus Thurgate and Costa Prochados in the team. So, yeah. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in this week. We hope that you've enjoyed the review. If you do want to get in touch, you can get in touch with us via social media and also through the NewcastleFootball.net forums. You can find us on all the different podcast platforms and on Spotify as well. Check the show notes if you want the links and all the different ways that you can listen to us. But my guess is that if you are hearing this, then you're probably listening to us through one of those platforms already. duh. Other than that, Ben, thanks very much, mate.
All right. Good to be back and good to have a win.
Mate, absolutely cracking to have you back on. And Luke, thank you very much.
Thanks as always, Dave.
And until then, until we speak to you later in the week, go the Jets.
Vamos el Jocos.
Go the Jets.
64 slices of all American cheese. Show them the cheese.
That was Curtin's problem. He had too much American cheese, and now he's blind.
I blame Mustafa.